So I'm pleased to welcome Charles Bethea and Ben Jealous to a little web extra here about our conversation. Charles, before we, or just as we left our thing that ended up on the radio, Ben makes the point that we've got to talk about the involvement of the white community in this conversation, the so-called conversation about race. When I talk to folks like Davon Love, who's with Leaders of the Beautiful Struggle, he and Adam and other folks have said, you know, we don't need the white community. The black community should have its own institutions, its own organizations, its own identity and own force that is advocating for issues of concern to people of color. That the white community needs to step aside. That part of the problem is oftentimes when they come in, even if they're well-intentioned, they tend to take over and overwhelm black activists who have been on the ground and in these communities, certainly in a much more significant way. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, there's nothing stating out there that you have to do either or, okay? Throughout history, there's nothing that's been advanced with one group, you know, pushing for something, you know, without the involvement of a larger community. It just hasn't happened. I mean, you know, you go back to, we're talking about police, you know, brutality. You go back to, you know, Deacon's defense. You go to, you know, 66 with the, you know, the Black Panther movement and so forth. There were Latino groups out there. There were the Weathermen. There were other white groups out there still pushing for the same agenda of police brutality, you know, civil rights within the community, looking at these things that allowed the message to be heard for the larger masses. When you take an issue that is viable and meaningful to a large group of people and you distill that down to a single group that is carrying that torch, it is often dismissed. So if you involve the larger community, you have a better chance of advancing your overall message.
Ben Jealous, when there was the incident of one of several incidents of violence at a Donald Trump rally several weeks ago where an older white guy sucker punched a young black man as he was walking up the steps to leave the arena.
Yes.
Trump's response to that the day after or so was, speaking of this white man that committed this crime, clearly he loves his country. How does one even formulate a response to that? When we talk about changing hearts and minds, how do you change a heart and mind that is ossified in that way to interpret an event like this, which everybody in the whole world saw, it's on videotape, as somehow an expression of love for his country?
Well, it's actually very dangerous, because when violence towards your fellow citizens becomes an expression of love for your country, we're in a perilous place. We are living in a time when our country is the most polarized by partisanship that it's ever been since the eve of the Civil War. And the fear that you get is that people stop being able to see each other as human, that they stop being able to kind of look beyond, you know, these boundaries of ideology and color and see each other as human. And that's why I think it's important to keep reminding people that there are other movements out there, right? That however many white people have ever been to a Donald Trump rally, there have always been more at the Bernie Sanders rally, right? Because otherwise you start sending the message to people, because, you know, you look at how much free media Trump has got, and you get the message to people that Trump is normative, and he's not. He's not normative in any respect. And I'm actually concerned that we're going to get not insignificant number of black men who vote for him. We could see, it is possible, that we will see the highest numbers of black support that we've seen since Nixon for him. Now, to be clear.
And what's at the root of that?
Well, I think what's at the root of that is that Donald Trump has multiple identities. And one of them is that he's had a lot of black apprentices, right? People have identified with Randall Pinkett or Miss Omarosa or whatever, right? So he comes in with a black fan base. 12% of people who watch NASCAR are black, okay? So we've got that many black people.
Yeah, who would have thunk it? That's interesting. That's news to me, baby.
Watching NASCAR. Now, here's the thing. The Republicans never get more than 8% of the vote. So could they get NASCAR numbers? Could they get 12% with Donald Trump? It's entirely possible, because one of his identities is that he's a winner. You know, he's a winner. He's a successful capitalist. You know, some people have said that Hillary Clinton, if she doesn't appoint Bernie to be her vice president, which she should put Michael Bloomberg out there just so he can attack the very idea that Donald Trump is a winner, right? Just so he can say, you want to talk about being a billionaire? I'm a billionaire. He's not exactly a billionaire. I'll explain to you why. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But so there's people who feel like if you're on the Trump team, you're on the winner's team. And the reality is I don't think Mr. Trump has stopped to really think about. In fact, I put it this way, I hope he has not stopped to think about, but he needs to, is what his example when he stands up for the violence of his supporters to people of other races and people who are different and people who disagree, what it sends our children, what hell it puts young people into on the schoolyard when they're the only black kid out there, you know, or they're the one out there, you know, supporting, they're the girl supporting Hillary Clinton, and you got some boy who's, you know, inspired by his hero, you know, who aspires to be our bully in chief, Donald Trump. You know, that's the real concern. We cannot take that stuff lightly.
And Charles, isn't it also the case that because we've got this sort of coarseness in the political discourse that involves people like Trump and the ideas that Trump is promoting, we've got, you know, a fair amount of disunity in the Democratic Party now. I mean, there's really serious divisions between the candidate that Ben Jealous is supporting, Bernie Sanders, and Hillary Clinton, who's been in the public eye for nearly 30 years and has been scrutinized. And a lot of people have taken a close look, and they don't like what they see. Doesn't that tend to engender more political disengagement? Don't folks just tend to throw their arms up and say, oh, it's too crazy, I don't want to even be involved?
Well, it does, but let's be real. That does not mean you do not show up to vote. Bottom line, you know, you're not going to agree with everyone all the time. You just can't. It's humanly impossible. And if you're looking at a particular candidate that responds to an act of violence as, you know, yeah, hey, you love your country, then speaking in the very country with everyone that is a citizen of that country, and the only thing that separates them are their thoughts and their skin color, there is a problem. And if you're looking on the other side of the aisle where you're talking about these tried and true methods of, okay, we need to do this, we need to, you know, advance our arena on the global stage because this is a bigger issue, there's more things going on at stake here, then yeah, you do have people that are saying, yeah, okay, some of it's the same thing that I've heard before. And the unfortunate part, as it relates to history, you know, folks have a tendency to come out and do the polar opposite of what's actually in place. So that's the real scary part about where, you know, Trump is right now and his followers and his supporters and so forth. And that 12% of that black vote that could possibly come out for him, very scary. Very.
But you think it's possible? Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to say.
We all have that uncle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We can look at our family reunion photograph and we can say that one might just do
right,
it.
Yep.
Oh man, you got to invite me to Thanksgiving at your house. That's got to be a good time. All right, Ben Jealous, from the formerly the director of the NAACP, a senior fellow now at the Center for American Progress and a partner at the Kaper Center for Social Impact, and Charles Bethay, chief curator of collections and exhibitions at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
You.